You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? To find your MO, tap now. Or for information on safe travel, come see me at visitmo.com.
Welcome back into another edition of The Kickabout here on the Blue Room. I am your host or co-host, Rob Vera, joined by my other host and co-host, Mark Mosey. Mark, I am, I was so excited about today, and I still am excited about today, because I feel like we've got lots to talk about. But we were just talking about it before I hit record, okay? I'm not going to lie, like, I don't necessarily, at the time of recording, which let's just do a timestamp here, Mark. That's industry talk right there for the time. Okay, it's 4:15 Central Time, 10:15 for those of you who live in the UK. So, someone retweets that stupid article linking us to Ben White, and it's knocked my wheels off for a variety of reasons, but the main reason being that that's no small part of it, but no, it's more that just like, I hope, obviously it's from the Daily Mail and it's not Dom King, and that's all I'll say. I mean, I think we know how a lot of those end up going in terms of transfer rumors. I've been told they do a good job on some of their investigative reporting for other things or what have you, but it's the Daily Mail, so I don't really know that I'd totally buy that, but let's just say it is true. The number of just absolutely, like, the Daily Mail was one of those, I remember years ago feeling like some of the names of the authors of those pieces were completely made up names. Like, I'm not, now granted, you English people have some delightfully, you know, whimsical names. I won't, you know, look, a guy named Danny Drinkwater exists in this world. Okay. So, I mean, I get it. But we're going to talk about Rafa, obviously. And you know what, Mark, I'm now at the acceptance stage of the whole thing. I know you guys have gotten to hear Mark and I, but probably more me because I'm way too overly emotional. But you've heard my kind of progression of going through all the stages of grief for Rafa. I wanted, after this was announced yesterday, for today to be a day where we got our first like half decent link from a non-Portuguese source this summer. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of what I mean, maybe Dumfries kind of was, but I don't know. But for it to be a center half, that's not the move. I'm just thinking to myself, we would spend 50 million looking at this squad. We would look at this squad and go, yeah, 50 million for another center half on the fucking pile. I mean, it's so dumb. And yet it's so Everton. And I'm going to choose for now until we hear something more reliable, not to believe it. But Mark, I think this sets you up more than anything, whether you have any opinions on Ben White or spending money on a center half or not. I do think this sets us up for today's discussion, which is about the emotional roller coaster of the last couple of weeks, but really the last couple of days, and what everyone thinks about all the things going on at the stadium stuff and Rafa and the Euros. And I'm just this is so much football, Mark. It's so much football. I'm getting almost footballed out, man. I haven't had a break. I'm like these players. I haven't had a break.
I think the unique thing about us doing the podcast this week on the day and the time that we're doing it is that for once, all of the stories are kind of breaking at a time whereby we are dangerously relevant here in terms of what people want and need to hear. That said, 15 minutes ago.
Dangerously relevant is, I think, the name of this week's episode. I'll write that down.
15 minutes ago, I did not expect to be leading into this show talking about Brighton's £50 million centre-half Ben White, who I will throw all of my opinion in here in the fact that I do not know much about this guy. I watch a lot of Premier League football, but I could not critique him in a way that makes me think that Everton should or should not go out and spend money on him. But we all know where the MO of this story is coming from. And as you said, Rob, earlier on, it's the media, and in particular because of the multiple managerial hunts that have been going on, and most notably our own, obviously, there is so much come and get me baited shit in particular newspapers at the moment. But
yeah,
the reek of desperation that agents and clubs and probably even players at times will use to get deals over the line is just outrageous. I mean, I'm not going to totally write this story off because I live in a world where James Rodriguez and Rafael Benitez came to Everton in consecutive seasons. So, you know what?
You mean after Carlo Ancelotti left and, you know, all this normal, totally normal football stuff that happens to Everton, yeah.
Show me a headline that I no longer believe in, but I think we're all pretty confident in where this is coming from, most notably because of the other team involved. I think Arsenal are up there with Everton in terms of clubs who can be publicly swayed in the media into spending as much money as possible. But obviously, any Everton fan and hopefully any staff member at Everton will know that the strengths in terms of depth in our squad at the moment very much rest in the centre of defence. And that is the one main reason why Everton will not be signing Ben White this summer. But yeah, on a wider transfer point, Rob, I think it's the fallout beyond Rafa was always going to be twofold and very interesting. We were always going to hear some form of stadium news. I'm not willing to be sceptical about that. It's purely a case of timing. We all know that progression with the Bramley Moore project was on the horizon. It coincides with Everton needing a manager. It's not a conspiracy. But also in terms of beyond Rafael Benitez's appointment, I think whether you are at the stage of acceptance or you are still deep in the fury of acknowledging his appointment, I think we have a collective agreement as Evertonians in that we're all ready to turn our attention to playing personnel. Probably the most gripping part of Rafael Benitez's appointment for me was knowing that Marcel Brands was not there because he'd been active in player recruitment duty.
Yes.
He's gone full Steve Walsh with the briefcase. Wow. And has apparently been in Holland looking at a player, in inverted commas. And I think we all know who we hope that is. But yeah, we are at the dangerous crux of transfer window where...
I do want to say this really quickly. I have to interrupt only because you made me think, you made me have a visual thing that just happened. Remember that photo of Steve Walsh in the suit that looked way too large for him, sweating his balls off in Italy with that suitcase.
Rob,
then imagine Marcel like in 90 degree weather, still wearing a cool turtleneck or something, and with a briefcase. And it's just what an odyssey this whole experience of following this club is, Mark.
Someone retweeted the video of Steve Walsh walking into. I can't even remember where he was or why he was over there, but it was up there with the. Do you remember the Muppets photo when we sent a delegation to go and sign João Moutinho from Sporting? Peak.
Moutinho was Yarmolenko before Yarmolenko was Yarmolenko for me.
Between him, Yarmolenko, and Raquel May, Ever Benega's up there, obviously, as well. But yeah, we have deeply invested into players who have not played for this club far more than some of the current ones that do. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting in particular the first 4 weeks of his tenure, I think there's a lot of work to do. I would like to think that the positive caveat of appointing someone who supposedly has a good knowledge of Premier League football is that we're not going to go into this wormhole of managers experimenting with players who we all know are no longer capable at this level and taking the time to realise that for himself. I would like to think that if Rafael Benitez is keen in getting Everton fans on board, I don't necessarily think that's his primary objective. I think he's very, very strong in character and he will do things his way and by his means. But if he is to appease a great deal of Everton fans, I think he'll buy into a season of turnover that this transfer window will be. It's very dangerous, obviously, to appoint a new manager and have such a high turnover in play and stuff. But I think that regeneration and kind of that freshness into the playing squad is probably the one thing that would just buy Rafa Benitez a little bit more time, certainly from the fan base. But I think in terms of buying favours or time from a very angsty fan base, the only thing that ultimately drives that down is points on the board. And I think we'll obviously talk about what going back to Goodison Park will be like in the coming weeks, but I think we can all be pretty unified in our opinion in that, in particular on the back of new stadium news today, I don't want our days at Everton or at Goodison Park to be full of toxicity and competitive nature. And I think everyone will always have an opinion on every single player and in particular any one football club's manager. But yeah. I'm not going to quite go full let's all get behind the lads and totally disregard all of the technical issues that we have with Rafael Benitez, but outright anger will get us nowhere. And I just hope for his sake, obviously from a club's sake generally, as with any season, but I hope that we start well this season just so that we can objectively talk about his performance as opposed to just getting into this character that we all think we know before he's even started.
You know, that, man, there's so much there, Mark. Like, I've been thinking about all of this, there's been like the part of me that thinks about how I feel. And then I think a lot about what you're saying there in terms of in the bigger picture of things. I think we all need to probably ask ourselves just how much effort is it worth to maintain being so upset?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the answer to that for every single person. And I think it's also important to note that those who feel upset about disappointment, I mean, I'm not upset per se, but I'm definitely not like thrilled with it, but I'm just kind of decided to move on. But I think that everyone is entitled to feel what they need to feel, and anyone who chooses to take a step back every once in a while from Everton, I get that, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, like, I think you make a good point. The whole everyone needs to get behind the club, like, it almost is like a cliche, it doesn't mean anything. I think everyone has to figure out how they feel about this, but ultimately, if you're going to be a Goodison, hopefully the majority of that environment is still an advantage for our side. Is still, to I think one of the broader points you may or may not have been making, Mark, just a positive atmosphere, especially after a year like we've all just had. It's going to be great for those of you who can get back to Goodison and just enjoy being out with your friends and your family and watching football, even if it is Everton.
with the stadium news coming out today, and obviously for those who've not heard it, I think Everton expect spades going in the ground on July 26th, which I think on the day that Everton acquire the land, the work starts, which was obviously very positive news today. But it did as much as I don't want to consistently talk about that, it feels as though we have to do a new Bramley Moore podcast every time there's a small change in developments. I feel like when we saw
a new permit gets approved. I mean, I made jokes about how many. It seemed like we were talking about 10,000 different permits at various stages. Yeah,
we'll definitely have to do like a city stand construction start podcast here. But no, overwhelmingly positive news, obviously. But it does get you thinking that if Everton were to move into that stadium in, I don't know, what were we looking at, 2024, 25, we've potentially got 60 games left at Goodison Park. Given the fact that we've obviously just lost out on 20 of them. I mean, for some of us that have been going for way beyond what I've been, which is, what, 25, 26 years, it's monumental to think that these remaining three or four seasons or whatever it turns out to be are so, so precious. And I just hope that, obviously, we hope that initially Rafael Benitez's appointment doesn't tarnish that. And I mean, what are we looking at? If we're looking at four seasons at an Everton rate of managers, we're probably looking at seeing three or four different managers in that time. it would be nice to gain some form of collective momentum in terms of Goodison Park just being that place. And we've all seen it during stages of the last, you know, 30 years on and off in Goodison Park just being famously hostile, a wonderful place for home fans to enjoy their team playing good football and just being collectively behind their club. And I know this all gets a little bit cliche, but it is coming from a romantic point in whereby we will definitely leave Goodison Park and on day one afterwards think, I can't believe I expelled so much energy booing Rafael Benitez as Everton for 60 minutes as we did to a 2-1 win over Southampton. You know, it's just,
yeah.
I think most of us, and you mention it, it's primarily on the back of the year that everyone's had, but I think that's probably why I've been, certainly for myself, I feel like I've been quite passive in this whole Rafael Benitez development, because you do automatically start thinking just so much more big picture about everything in life, and obviously football comes into that as well. But I like to think that this is potentially, and I know I'm talking about Everton fans here, but this is potentially just an opportunity for us all to feel a whole lot less angry about everything. Don't get me wrong, 70 minutes into that first game, Rob, I will be lashing all manner of wear onto that pitch. But you do hope from that point of view, from Goodison Park especially, we will talk countlessly about those four walls over the next three or four seasons and how much we'll miss them beyond that. But I think that was probably my takeaway today when Denise Barrett-Baxendale confirmed that construction work was imminent.
Yeah, I've used the word processing a whole lot this week, and I think that with just the flurry of stories over the last 24 to 48 hours, I think I'm still kind of getting through all of that. And then when you put it in those terms about how many games we may have left there, man, it really hits you. And I lament that no one got to see games at home this season. And I lament, you know, I feel for those of you, especially those of you who were season ticket holders, that's a huge gut punch. But for me, I haven't seen a season either. And I definitely want to make it over. I'd really like to make it over at least two or three more times. Maybe three might be ambitious. I don't know, but I'm going to try. And I think what'll be interesting to kind of, if you're considering the odd mix that we've got here of having someone with the background, the context, the narrative, whatever, of Rafa Benitez taking over at a time where I think pretty soon, I mean, I think Everton are pretty decent at marketing, but I imagine we're going to start to see, now that the stadium construction has officially begun. I think we're going to start shifting into Goodison tribute mode quite a bit, as not only as a fan base, but I think the club will too. It's really interesting to have Rafa Benitez as the manager during a period like that. These are the kinds of random things I'm thinking about. It's just, what is the dynamic going to be where I think not only will there be a lot of tribute to Goodison, but I don't even know. This may be totally me being just idealistic or something like that, but I guess I would like to think that there's this opportunity for, or this moment that can occur with the players, who, let's be pretty clear, it's been underwhelming. It was terrible at Goodison with no one there, as the caveat, of course, last season. But it hasn't been, it hasn't been great for a while, right? I mean, it just hasn't. And so all those things that we talk about constantly about wanting to see a more committed effort, wanting to see a gives a fuck kind of a squad who really cares. I think there will be this kind of, I'd like to think there would be this sort of collective pressure, if you will, for the players to, in these last couple seasons, Goodison, to really go out with a bang. I don't want a place as great as Goodison does not deserve to close in the current long-term form. Does that make sense, Mark? They don't deserve, Goodison deserves better. Everton, I mean, we deserve better. Not that that's ever meant anything, but I mean, I do hope that between us, between people getting back and between people just kind of deciding that it's good to just be watching football live again. I think it's totally legit for you to feel kind of hurt by all of this. But I also think that at a certain point, and really it's up to that person, everyone's different. But I think at a certain point, it'll make sense to come back, because we always come back. I mean, for the most part, I'm sure there's someone out there, who said that Everton finally pushed them over the edge and they said, I'm done, and they actually are done. I've never actually seen evidence of that, but I totally admit that, much like the fact that I haven't seen evidence of UFOs doesn't mean that they're not out there. I mean, it's all these things are relative, but I hope that Everton is not just a continuously painful experience. And if Rafa Benitez can come in, frankly, and just if they get a couple decent players, I've given up expectations about being elite or great or good. I don't even know what I expect anymore, Mark. We talked at length about that, but I do just want people in general to view the experience as something more positive than it's been for a while. That's a very low bar, but a competent manager and better players, even if it's Rafa Benitez, I don't think that that's beyond the realm of possibility. It'd just be nice to be able to root for them in a more meaningful way or in a better way than we have been able to for a variety of reasons for a while now.
Yeah. And you mentioned about, if I could think of a collective unit of Everton players that I've seen play live, finish off the last few years at Goodison Park and potentially take us into a new one. And you're right in all those emotive things that you say about, this is an important time for Everton fans to be able to connect with their players, because home games are going to have that ever increasing emotional pressure on them, and it will reach the point where the expectation prior to games, and we hope that there will be a momentum. It will either be a Roberto Martinez's first season momentum, whereby we just have this indestructible force of a Everton side at Goodison Park, and with every coming moment towards that closure of the ground, the whole positive nature of the club just reaches the point whereby we all go out on this wonderful, elusive high. Everything that I know about Everton means that it could very dangerously go the other way as well. And what you say about the players that we currently have is that when when you do need that connection between players and spectators, that's I appreciate this is easy to say after a year of not actually being there to boo them a lot, but this is in particular a group of players who don't give you all of those feelings when you watch them. It's very easy to get on their back when they're playing poorly, which is annoyingly more often than not. And you feel as though you're giving praise out to individual players through gritted teeth a lot of the time because you've seen them underwhelm you so much more than you've seen them be positive. I mean, we all know the players that we're talking about, but someone like Gylfi Sigurdsson will be frustratingly good for two games. And he'll almost bring you to the point of thinking that he is still Everton's creator for the 2 years going forward. But
yeah,
10 minutes into the third game in that run, it will all come crashing down around you. And I think there's an interesting tie-in with Rafael Benitez here because, and I'll give credit where it's due, on the 4 weekly chats that I managed to have over the pharmacy counter with patients don't talk about medication and tablets, but actually want to talk about Everton, which I am all for, by the way. But if you are listening, I am going to rob your point straight away and claim it as my own, because the point that we've been chatting about this week is we have a number of Everton players at this club now who have seen off a number of managers. And I think that that is something that we've always felt, that regardless of a manager's performance, and we all know the pressure which comes with the top job. If results are not there, the axe will ultimately fall on your head. And Premier League managers wouldn't have it any other way. But the concern with, obviously, all of the things we just said about the stadium, but the direct concern with the group of players that we've got and Rafael Benitez and the nature of the emotion of the appointment that we've made is that we have recent history that tells us that if things are going badly, these players will totally throw it in and they will let the manager take all of the negative hit for anything that is going on. And I think that the precursor to this season could potentially be if Everton have a bad run of form at any point, we're going to see exactly the same sort of pattern from those, in inverted commas, experienced players who you expect to carry you through tough and dark times, but really don't. And the pressure that a manager would ordinarily have anyway is going to be massively amplified by the fact that these players are very aware that Rafael Benitez is the man to take all of the pressure off them as footballers. And I think that is,
that's the thing that scares me the most. Absolutely.
I obviously, there's been so much media talk about how the fans have to be patient, etc. And so much of the proposed dynamic has been around how stands to dugout interact with each other. And I think you can very naively forget that the players are that connector, that they are the expression of Rafael Benitez on the pitch. They are also a deflection of any form of angst we may have towards Rafael Benitez, because they are ultimately the bodies that bring in positive or negative results. But I think it's a very important time for Everton players to decide where they want to be in this battle of being on board with the whole club philosophy, or are they purely money-grabbing sportsmen who will use any form of, in particular, situation that they are in to elevate themselves potentially away from Goodison Park. And I think that that's a massive challenge to the players that they may not have even realised is on the horizon yet, but they will only really realise the kind of platform they have to manipulate this situation when it's going badly. Because after 6 or 7 games, you'll very quickly know the players who are in it for not only the club, but the manager in particular. Worryingly, I would say that on instinct, we've probably got more players who will shy away from that challenge than players who will grab the ball by the horns.
I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and this is random. I mean, it feels like once Everton have appointed Rafa Benitez as their manager, just saying the words is still something I'm getting used to. It's like when that becomes reality, then suddenly everything is up for consideration or like, you know, like I think any discussion about changes at Everton are valid. Like if we've gotten to this point where we're hiring this guy, who I actually, you know, I have a mixed, again, he wouldn't have been my choice. I have a mixed view of him. I think he absolutely, you can't argue with the fact that yes, he has displayed a lot of competence over the years. He's won things, you know, at the same time, he hasn't won much in a while. I mean, I think all those things can be true at the same time. But like once that's true, I have questions about the squad then too, about these players. You know, like there's nothing that gives me tired head more than talking about the captain question. But I think the more fundamental question I have, Mark, is, you know, maybe we can dance around the word captain, because I don't want to put it all on Seamus Coleman or any one person per se. I mean, a character in a squad can't just be one guy and everyone follows. It's got to be something that does permeate the squad a bit. I do think Everton actually have some leader types in there, but I do wonder at times if just continuing to maintain the same, you know, it's not really like Seamus Coleman is a super high character guy, but I think that sometimes we equate that with automatically, well, if he's super high character and, you know, says the right things to the, you know, like he's a good servant of the club type, right? Like he works his ass off. I bet he is a great example for young players. Like all those things can be true to a degree, but I don't know that being a high character guy who's a good example is enough, if that makes sense, in terms of leader, in terms of the ethos of this group. Like, it's like on the one hand, I would make a good argument for Seamus Coleman. I mean, you could make a really good argument for why you think Seamus Coleman's a good captain. But again, this seems like an attack on Seamus Coleman, but it's about the whole player leadership character DNA of this group. The question becomes, you can believe that Coleman and what his vibe is and what the whole leadership group and all those things have done are either adequate or not. But you can't argue with the results. You can't argue with how this team plays, to your point, Mark.
Yeah.
Once they sense the blood in the water on, and again, I think that they downed tools under Martinez. I don't know. I think they tried for Silva, but they didn't, they weren't being directed in any meaningful way. That, I mean, Silva worked hard, but he just had it all wrong, you know? And I think the players liked him, but they couldn't, you know, whatever. I think Carlo, you know, Allardyce, the less said about him, you know, whatever. I almost give the players a pass on that. But at a certain point, you just can't ignore all of these signs, and you have to ask questions about the, you know, which players are truly untouchable, you know, which players are leading. I think that Ben Godfrey is a young player who has a lot of leadership potential and he leads by example, but he's still a kid. I mean, his job right now is to focus on developing as a footballer, A, B, C, and D.
Go ahead. On loan next year, because if Ben White comes in and
well, yeah, I can't. But like, I just, yeah, but I mean, you've got, I think, I mean, Keane has been a captain, but it's so weird how he does not give off captain vibes, if that makes sense. Sigurdsson has been a captain and does not give off captain vibes to me. Maybe, I think he does for Iceland, but he doesn't. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's handsome, but that's, I mean, that's not enough, guys. Like, I think if you think real hard on Gylfi as a captain, you ask yourself, well, what is it exactly that he does that's captain-y? I don't know. But my point is, like, I think Yerry Mina, if you watch Yerry Mina play for Colombia, you see what kind of, like, he is the captain. Ospina may nominally be the captain, but Yerry Mina is the captain of Colombia. But, like, you have guys, and I do wonder at a certain point, what will be, Mark, to your question, the ability of Rafa Benitez not only to get performance out of this group, but to get some degree of inspired loyalty. And you know, he's this sort of cold guy. Can that cold guy still, get through to the young player of today? I don't see, these are all questions that I think are legit and I don't know the answer to, but I think it's interesting enough at least to see what happens and what choice do we really have.
I'm still laughing at the Gylfi Sigurdsson captain vibes. I'm like, he's been here for a number of years now, and he has occasionally given me an actual footballer vibes, but for most of the time, it's never really got even to that height. But yeah, it's we're talking about an interesting balance between a player's technical ability and their personality and their mentality. And you mentioned someone like Ben Godfrey, who yes, is very capable on the ball. He's a very good one-on-one defender. But the reason that he has embedded himself within this club so quickly is that Evertonians can look into his eyes and they know that he gets it. And that's not, yeah. That's not talking about, you know, the very flippant, he knows what Everton is sort of thing. He just knows what it takes to win a high-level sport. And you can tell within 45 minutes of watching the lad play that whether he achieves greatness in the next 3 years or in the next 23 years, he will make it there because he has the attributes that are impossible to teach young sports people and very much older sports people as well. Some people never get to that level of maturity and that level of mentality that he has. And yeah. I think that the personification.
You won't get any argument from me about Godfrey as a player. It was just more about, like, you know, I'm just trying to, the fact that you have to search this much for who you think the leaders are is kind of part of the problem. Yeah. You know?
We have a splattering of players in this squad who are technically capable, but are never going to be in that echelon of leader or captain or whatever you want to call it. And I think that the person who's been in the news today is probably the personification of this kind of balance of technical ability and also having the ability to throw the towel in when it gets a bit rough. And I think the reason why most Evertonians are, I would say, I'm not going to say they're not disappointed, but there's an acceptance about James Rodriguez leaving this football club.
Were you talking about James Rodriguez there, or were you talking about Phil Neville there? Because I couldn't quite.
we'll come on to that on a much more angry.
Sorry, I just had to ask.
We're scared of winning, lads. The James story about him obviously going to AC Milan, which we can talk about transfer speculation in the media all you like, but everything about me knows that this one is absolutely true. But it's hard as an Evertonian, and we saw great things from him technically, but there is that feeling inside you that thinks you are not for Everton, and that's not because he's not probably the greatest technical footballer who's ever played for this club. I said that last year and I'll say it still now, that I've never seen a more gifted footballer Paul Everton shirt on, but there's an awkwardness about watching him when he's not at that peak level, and it's because there's an inherent belief from every fan and probably the player as well, and in particular his agent, in that this is just not a match made in heaven. And I think we've spoken long and hard in the last few weeks about potentially putting Everton and their fans and everything about the club on a bit of a pedestal. But I'm not saying in any way that James Rodriguez is not good enough in terms of a mentality point of view for this.
No, I know what you're saying. Like, it feels like an odd fit.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where no one likes to talk about it because you want him here. You kind of want him here and you kind of enjoy watching him. But in your heart of hearts, you know that, A, like you said, he's probably gone. And B, like, given if we were a good side, he's the luxury player, right? But when you rely on him, and that was the weird thing too. Remember when Carlos signed him, remember what he said? He said, James needs a place where he is the focal point and where he is relied upon. And then I feel like we never got a real straight answer about a lot of his injuries and about him, especially that last game against City, you know, which I'm still mystified about. It's a lot of things like that, but no, yeah, James Rodriguez. It's just,
we are consistently going to be a football club who has to walk through the Premier League dog shit. We are going to be under pressure and not performing for a lot of the time. And that's just how Everton history reads. But he doesn't give you that. We're not trying to strip away what James Rodriguez is. And as you said, Rob, he's a high-end, top-level club luxury player. But
right.
We are not that platform. And
no, we're not that club. We're not right now.
I really want us to be, you know, third or fourth in the league. We've got some fantastic central midfielders that mean that all of the attacking players can go and do whatever the fuck they like. Don't worry about all of the hard work and all the nitty-gritty that we know that Everton players are just going to have, because we're not good enough to not do those things. But that sort of everything we've said in the show about the whole connectivity between different levels of the club, he always felt as though he was just on the outside of that, a bit of a spectator, and potentially it all just felt a little bit too experimental to actually buy into. And I think everything that we've said about what Everton need to be going forward for years now, but in particular in this next 3 years at Goodison Park, it would have consistently felt as though there was this constant disconnect. And I honestly don't think that someone like Rafa Benitez, having seen him manage at the top level 45 years ago, I honestly don't think that he'll see someone like James Rodriguez go and be deeply saddened by that. Because I think when you're in a state in time that Everton are at the moment, you need players who are going to buy into a manager or buy into a club philosophy. And James Rodriguez was not here for the club's philosophy. He was here for himself and for Jorge Mendes. And that's just how certain footballers are.
Well, and I was musing about this before, but like, and this is weird because it's not an absolute or anything. It's just, do you ever notice, is there a part of you that ever notices, for instance, when you look up a player's social media profile, like on an Instagram or on a Twitter, some of them will put, like, you take Everton players, for instance, they're the types that will put, you know, footballer for Everton FC, whatever, you know. But there are also quite a few who put athlete, you know, they put like generic athlete, then they put something about Nike or Adidas or whatever. And it doesn't mean, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it's a vibe, isn't it? Like it is James Rodriguez. Look, I said it a bunch of times and I don't regret it. He's a transcendent talent. Transcendent talents don't always, you know, their output doesn't always match the talent. And again, when he played, I still think he was overall pretty good. He was really dangerous for us, what have you. But this is who he is in terms of the number, in terms of his availability. Okay. It's just, it's a reality. And he's going to get, you know, he's the kind of guy who's on a Champions League squad for a reason, because, you know, I can see him being someone who starts here and there in the league or whatever, but you know, you bring him on for Champions League, you know, he's a luxury player. We're just not that side right now. And I think that there is, I wonder, I don't know this, but I do wonder, and getting back to the idea of if Rafa Benitez can be the manager of Everton, what else is possible? I do wonder if there is this kind of storm coming in terms of changes at the club, not changes at the club, like the board level yet. Like I don't buy that Marcel Brandt, he just signed a contract. I just don't buy that he cares enough. He's going to stick around, but like player wise, you know, Mark, we brought this up months ago, but is there a chance? I just wonder if there's a chance that someone truly significant departs the squad this summer. And by the way, it could be multiple. And when I say significant, I don't just mean James Rodriguez. I mean, what if it is Richarlison? God forbid. Like, I don't think Calvert-Lewin, I think the Euros have pretty much kept him at Everton, by the way. So, which I'm totally fine with. But, like, I just wonder, like, is there, hey, and I acknowledge, by the way, and I live in fear and I've had the bad nightmare dream, Mark, that Yerry Mina could be gone. I mean, that anything is possible. I'm not delusional. And it scares me a little bit. But I also do think that some kind of shakeup. I don't think Yerry Mina is the problem, clearly, but I mean, some kind of shakeup in the chemistry, in the way certain players complement or don't complement one another. You feel like if they're going to hire Rafa Benitez, that means that they are in the mindset that, you know what, every option is on the table. Because when we're at the point of hiring Rafa Benitez at Everton, like, you have to say it, the full sentence, to really feel it. But once you've gone that far, I think anything's possible. And I wonder if we will be surprised or even somewhat shocked by something weird that happens in the transfer window this summer.
But I think most of us were ready for that style of summer. And I think as much as we would all say that, you know, mass disruption in terms of your playing staff is very rarely a good thing. This is not Football Manager, and we don't want to be talking about big players leaving the club. Funny you mentioned about the Euros saving us from player losses. I think my main fear was Luca Dean lighting it up for France at the Euros for reasons that is obviously not happening now. But I think he would have been the one that, you know, as much as obviously Dominic Calvert-Lewin is right up there as well, but for someone like Luca Dean, who I appreciate had rocky spells during this season, he really struck me as someone who could be plucked out by one of Europe's elite sides and said, well, you can slot in here pretty comfortably and be our starting left back. And I think that's the assurance that high quality players give you. Richarlison will consistently be at the forefront of this debate for me, because I think he's good enough to be sought out by bigger and better clubs, and he's also volatile enough for Everton fans to talk flippantly about him. I don't think, regardless of the fact that people like Luca Dean have hit rocky form, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, probably towards the end of the season, you'd say the same thing. You are getting pretty consistent 7 out of 10s. They'll chip in with goals, they'll chip in with assists. You can pretty much dictate the nature of what an average to good season looks like for those players. With Richarlison, we've seen, you only have to go back 24 months now to see a player who is very capable of being one of the Premier League's leading attacking players, but also one of the biggest disappointments in the entire campaign. I think that's the... It's very hard as an Evertonian who has a player like that, and for all of the same reasons that we've spoken quite loosely about James Rodriguez and how we all at this point now buy into the fact that it's not much of a loss. You quite rightly say that when that lad's on form, we are a different football team, and the same could be said about Richarlison as well. But it comes down to how affordable you think these players are, not from a price point of view, but can Everton afford to have these players in their side when they're going to get a 9 out of 10 every 4 weeks and then a couple of 4s and a 6 to follow it up? Have we got the capability and the structure in our starting 11 to allow someone like that to go and be relatively flamboyant, probably win us 1 in 3 or 4 games, but also mean that we don't really ever consistently build on a playing style or a culture at the club? I've been pretty open about Richarlison in the past and my feelings about him. And I like to think that I'm not being flippant on the back of the season that we've just seen. But I still think that if you are talking about selling your best players at their peak in order to generate the highest finance possible, I don't always think that that is the right decision, because very often these players are hard to replace. But I think in terms of the type of fee that we'd be talking about, I mean, for argument's sake, let's say it was £60 million. I think that he probably is one of the more replaceable players at that level. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I would say, is absolutely not. It's very hard to go and find a striker who is as young as he is, as hungry as he is, and is also capable of scoring 15 or 20 goals a season, which proven is a very loose word to use here, but he's shown he can do it. And I think that's we don't want to talk about players leaving the club. I think that the one that's come to light today, which I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on, just the nature of the deal that this looks like being, and that's Moyes Keane leaving to Paris.
Jeez.
I mean, remember that guy? These are top level, sought after European players who Everton have on their books. And at some point, we are going to have to acknowledge the fact that for whatever reason, they are not going to want to be here unless we are proving that we are the club for them to be at. And Moyes Keane's situation's a little bit different because he's never been here in terms of a consistent squad member point of view. But for someone like Richarlison, I mean, do we wait for us to just totally outshit him to the point that he doesn't want to be here? Or do we actually be a little bit proactive in terms of not actively selling him, but just accepting the situation?
But is it proactive to sell him at his low point after a bad Premier League season? That's the thing I keep coming back to. It's like, you know, Richarlison is someone who has shown that when he's in top form, he can be one of the very best scorers in the league, or creative scorers in the league. I mean, he's definitely not in that first tier, but, you know, that's, I would say he was scoring a lot of goals, and he was being moved around from, you know, playing up front to playing on the left. He's a forward. He's absolutely a forward. He's a huge talent, and he is young. He's a couple months younger than Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who will always be talked about as a young player when we get into these discussions. But it's important to remember that Richarlison is a young player who starts for Brazil. And if you've seen him at Copa America, my goodness, he looks great. And I think that, you know, I don't know that we'll ever know everything about the dynamics with him, you know, his frustrations at points last season. But I acknowledge that Richarlison will eventually get his quote move, because he's really talented and he works hard. He's frustrating sometimes, and he is emotional and all those things, and he's super competitive. But here's my thing. He's all those things, but he's also 24 years old, and I'm willing to, you know, we're sitting here looking at Jordan Pickford with a new haircut and 6 to 8 months of half decent of pretty good form, and he's been great for England in the Euros, and all those things are true. But we've waited a while for that to pan out. I always find it interesting how long we are willing to let certain things pan out depending on certain factors, and I won't get into all that. But I with Richarlison, I'm pragmatic from the standpoint that you're right. Like, I do think there is a good argument to being proactive and maybe selling at a targeted or an opportunistic time. I just don't know that this is that time when we're really kind of in a seller's market I don't know what kind of market we're in, honestly, because I think, well, we won't get, you know, these huge fees, but then you kind of see it. Like, now, granted, Sancho went for less to United than I thought he would, given the numbers that they used to bandy about. But, and we'll talk about Moyes Keane here in this exact same light. But I'd like to give Richarlison a season to bounce back, turn 25, give us one more season of him busting his ass, because he's going to, you know, if he really wants to move, he'll play like it. And, I want that bounce season from him. And then I want to sell him for significantly more than I feel like we could get for him right now. That's my opinion. Back to the original point, Mark, it could absolutely happen. And when you talk about Moyes Keane, I'm a little mystified, but at the same time, it's like, Moyes Keane scored a decent number of goals for PSG, and they are so, it's like, they're so well, they have so many other options that he's sort of a nice to have, and they're not willing to, you know, just pony up what Everton think he's worth. And frankly, if I'm Everton, look, I've made this clear before. if the only option is a loan with an option to buy and not an option to buy, that's like the third, that's the worst of the three options.
Yeah.
Selling is the best option. Loan with an obligation to buy is the best option because you know you've got a bottom line fee. An option, man, he has a bad season. If he has a bad season, they're not going to take it up. If he has a great season, you're going to get less than market value. I hate the whole concept of it. I think Everton, I know no one, everyone's like, well, Moise Keane can't come back, and maybe he can't, but I'd sell him to Juventus, sell him to someone who will pay, you know, at least give you a fee, get your money back. I feel like there's got to be more to this story, or the loan fee is an exorbitant amount of money. You know, like 2 years of loan fees from I don't know, but I like the way that we do, the way we allocate our resources is just so insane the last 10 years or so, like the last, you know, or since basically since not only since Mascheri came in, but even a little before that, but definitely since Mascheri came in, it's just, it's so scattershot. And it's why I can't bring myself to have expectations in the way that I would like to.
Yeah, I think that the last point I'd make about Richarlison is that I'll hold my hands up and say I have no idea what his current contract situation is. But I think what always burns in the back of my mind is that the sooner that you all accept now that Richarlison will never sign a new contract at this club, In my mind, that just means that the time bomb is consistently ticking, and it's an important financial decision to decide whether we are going to take every single year of this contract and drag everything out of him as a footballer that we can, or are we just? As I say, I don't want to think about us proactively selling. It's just using a bit of initiative, and if we're talking about initiative in the transfer market, the Moise Keane deal reeks of a lack of it, because why there is a haste to loan him out with, well, I appreciate that,
well,
some loan fee, but it's July the 1st.
Moise Keane did it to himself, didn't he? But Moise Keane kind of did it to himself, because once he made it clear he would, under no circumstances, you know, like he didn't want to come back to Everton or go anywhere else. I mean, PSG kind of has you by the balls at that point a little bit. So that's the only slight thing that I will, you know, give a benefit of the doubt to. But you're right. It's stupid. It's dumb. It's a lack of imagination, I feel like. But when the players dug their heels in, it's not easy to navigate that.
I would probably say that's much more true at the end of a transfer window, though. I am quite ready now for Everton, for once in their life, if a club like PSG wants to come and bully us and take our best potential prospects on loan for a minimal fee. Are we ever going to tell one of these clubs to fuck off and just kind of change our mentality and how we are seen in this market? Everton are very dangerous upon themselves, because we've got a lot of money to make a lot of reckless and stupid decisions. And we've got very much more money than sense when it comes to dragging every pound out of transfer deals, be they selling or buying players. Whereas you look at someone like Daniel Levy, who everyone knows is horrible when it comes to these negotiation processes. But if it means getting an extra £1 million for his football club for a £60 million player, he will do it, because he knows the value that money, and not only the money, but your perception in the footballing world, and in particular in the transfer market. Everton are just that team who can be bullied out of an extra £5 or £10 million at will. And we've seen it in a no better example than when
Swansea bullied us, Mark.
Swansea City. They just and just said no, 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 until Everton eventually just kept adding millions and millions of pounds onto a transfer fee that they felt had to be paid, because we had to have this player, because 6 weeks ago we decided that he was ours. And it's just, I'd just like to see us be, both in terms of acquisitions and in terms of sales, just a little bit more sensible. It's fine to walk away from decisions. It's fine to walk away from potential sales of a player like Moise Keane with 8 weeks left of the transfer window. It's okay to say to Paris Saint-Germain, give us money or piss off. Yeah. And I think there's plenty of other teams around the world who are happy to take a, what, 25 to 30 million pound gamble on Moise Keane, because that's just the nature of the gamble for a player like him, is that he will retain his value. I think Everton have just totally forgotten that in the last few weeks. And do you know what? It's probably going to happen, because as we all know what this football club functions like, but I would like to see us not for once held to ransom by a 19, 20-year-old footballer and a superpower club just because we feel obliged to do deals with them.
Well, like, I agree with you on, like, I see, here's the thing. I agree with you on everything you've just said about how the club should approach dealing with PSG and understanding the asset that they've got. So to me, to kind of connect it back to the previous conversation, I think that you can, on the one hand, say that Everton need to toughen up and not sell it at a discount a player. Like, I just, and to me, you know, you mentioned before, you've got to accept that Richarlison is never going to sign a new contract. I mean, he kind of just did sign a 5-year deal not that long ago. And I think that the idea here is that you did that knowing you wouldn't going to be here for 5 years, but you did that with the idea of protecting your asset. And to me, just like with Moise Keane, I think Everton need to take a longer view of what that asset is and what it can be. Richarlison and Moise Keane, if they land in the right situations and they're developed, continue to develop in a lot of factors, I understand. But they are really considerable talents. They are guys that if you told me in 3 years that Richarlison was one of the, you know, 10 best players in the world or something crazy, like, it wouldn't totally shock me. Yeah. Like, if he was score, I mean, he's incredibly talented. I don't think anyone denies that. He works hard. And, I mean, I love him, but I also am disappointed in how he played this season. Granted, Moise Keane was a disappointment. We shipped him off and he did well for one of the richest clubs in the world. And I think understanding the asset, going back to that concept, is looking at Moise Keane and saying to yourself, why don't we just go ahead and project one of the better case scenarios for what he could be? And then ask ourselves, what amount minus, you know, the 3 or 4 years behind that projection that you are, do I think is really worth allowing this player to go, or to go on loan, or to, you know, what is my bottom line? I think Everton, especially dealing with a club like PSG, to your point, Mark, they need to be able to say, you know, they need to be able to say, no, you have the money. You can pay us the money. If you want the player there, you know, just do that. And I don't see any reason why they can't do that. But for the kind of sides that are going to come in for Richarlison, they've got that kind of money too, in all likelihood. And the good silver lining of where we're at right now is that we do have assets we can sell and reinvest. And that's just the truth. But I think that it would be premature, to your point, to allow Moise Keane to go for a substandard deal. And I also believe we should just wait till the last day of the transfer window and make him sweat. But in the same breath, I also believe it's just a little premature to sell Richarlison at this point. Having said that, just to get back to the original point, nothing would shock me at this point, because once you've hired Rafa Benitez, anything is possible. So,
how's he doing in the Copa America, Rob? Have you been watching him?
Who, Richarlison?
Richarlison, yeah.
Yes, dude. I mean, he still has a little bit of that, probably not scoring as many goals as some of the chances that he's got, you know. I think some of our smarter friends would say he sometimes performs a little below his XG, if you will. But his presence, boy, like, it's one of those things where unless you watch it, you don't fully appreciate what Richarlison is doing. He is just a nuisance and a constant threat in terms of either getting his head on a ball in the box off a set piece, or really within the flow of play, because he's got such great pace and he's just so incredibly hard to move off of his feet. He can, you know, he'll go down clearly in certain situations. And, you know, we know that sometimes people say he makes a meal of things, whatever. I don't even care. He's awesome. And it's fun to watch him be fully engaged. And look, a lot of players, as we're seeing in the Euros right now, they absolutely, like, I think it's still, as an American watching it sometimes, I find it so interesting. The level of passion these guys have to play for their national sides for a short burst in a tournament compared, and you're like, well, why can't I see this every week at Everton? Because they couldn't expel that much energy, I don't think, over maybe every single game. I don't know. But all I know is that, you know, for all the jokes and all the ways I view national football, especially in the middle of the Premier League season, as this just giant nuisance, I also think that we're seeing right now in both the Euros and the Copa how invested these guys are in it. And I think we are running these dudes into the ground. But man, Richarlison looks up for it. He didn't start their last group game because they had already qualified and it was just a dead rubber game, whatever. But he's been meaningful in all these games. Yerry Mina, for those who've not watched, caveats aside, that I'm Yerry Mina's biggest fan, and you can shake your head all you want at me, Mark. It's true. All the caveats aside, but you asked me if I've been watching Copa America, and I have. I've watched Colombia's games and watching Brazil. Yerry Mina has been, there was an own goal in one of the games, which was just ridiculous because he was the man of the match for the better part of that game. It wasn't even one of those like things that I think people have created, this Yerry Mina falls over and hits eight limbs and knocks the ball in, like that happens all the time. But it was just it actually one of those where the guy fired it in, it just chipped off his chest and it went in, and you know, shit happens. But Yerry Mina has looked incredible. I retweeted, I think a lot of people saw the tweet going around about how he's first in basically every center half category in the entire Copa America. That may be too, because Yerry Mina is 6'5" and is so big compared to a lot of these South American players, but it still doesn't matter. He's been immense. But no, Richarlison and Yerry Mina both looked really good. Colombia plays, I believe, on Saturday. Yeah, I think Saturday in their quarterfinal match against Uruguay. And then Brazil, I think, plays Sunday. And so Brazil's going to win it. I think they're just so good. And by the way, all the great dramatic Euro matches we've had, the best one of Copa America so far was actually Colombia versus Brazil. For those who missed it, we had everything. We had the controversial goal awarded. We had a team like Colombia Everton'd it all, like just Everton'd it all over the place, guys. I mean, up 1-0 against in Rio de Janeiro against Brazil. They had not lost in Brazil in the Copa America since the late 70s. Colombia's 1-0 up, getting close to the 80th minute of the game. And basically they kick the ball off the match official. He raises his arm to blow the whistle, but then doesn't. The Colombia defenders all stop for that split second, and Brazil just passes, you know, one pass, two pass into the net. And it took, I mean, you even if the only highlight you had seen was just the Colombia players surrounding the referee for a good 10 minutes. And I say 10 minutes because there was 10 minutes of stoppage time at the end of this game, during which Brazil scored in, I believe, in the 10th minute of stoppage time. Yes. Off a corner to win the game. And they went crazy. I mean, if it had been in the Euros, there'd been a crowd there. And that's the saddest part about Copa this year, is there's no crowds. And I'm telling you, that crowd in Rio for Brazil and Colombia would have just been absolutely incredible. And the game was great. But no, Mark, I've done my bit about Copa. I did want to highlight, though, like I'm still getting over that France loss, like getting through that France loss. It was one of the most incredible games I've ever seen, but also the Spain game before it. I mean, this tournament has just been as even better than I thought it could be. And I already thought it was going to be really good. It started off a little slow, but man, it's just been fantastic ever since.
I've never been more genuinely exhausted after a day of football than as it crept into extra time in that France-Switzerland game. It was, as you mentioned, the Croatia fight back seemed as impossible as the Switzerland one. Even I know that we all know what Croatia are capable of doing in these tournaments, but I think we'd all bought into the idea that they were a team that very much peaked a few years ago and were on the way out, and it was kind of Luka Modric's swan song. But yet for them to come back from 3-1 down against a team in Spain who seems so capable at scoring goals at will, and I think it's ironic that for so long since the kind of David Villa, Fernando Torres era, that scoring goals has probably been their biggest issue. I think going back to the World Cup in Russia, for example, they will always look incredibly aesthetic on the ball, and their ability to pass teams into death is just second to none, and that will always be the epitome of Spanish football. But they are so clinical in front of goal now, and I think in particular players like Ferran Torres and Sarabia, who obviously scored against Croatia, they look potentially as big of a force as they were going back to their peak of winning Euros and World Cups themselves. But yeah, the France game, I find myself in a really weird state of mind, because as a neutral football fan, I think you always kind of gravitate towards the underdog and the kind of romantic story of a Switzerland getting back in it and winning on penalties, which is obviously ultimately what happened. But France and their individual players are so gifted that I just didn't want to see them go out. And I know that Kylian Mbappe in particular had not hit the heights that he would expect to in this tournament, but just seeing players like Paul Pogba play in the right position, doing the thing.
Paul Pogba, who plays for France, is just...
It's incredible
to watch.
He was an absolute shoo-in to win player of the tournament if France got to the final for me, because he is just mercurial. When you give him that freedom in such an important area of the pitch, how often did you find yourself watching him play an impossible through ball? He played that kind of half volley pass out to the left wing at one stage as well. And you look at him and think, you've been playing left midfield every now and again for Man United. And we sit and scratch our heads about how they aren't getting the best out of this potentially £100 million player. I mean, he is something else. And we've said this when Man United have played at Goodison Park in the past. And it was in the game where... My main memory of this game is Jesse Lingard curling one in at the park end. And
that was the game that I was at. That was my first game at Goodison with you guys. It was New Year's Day. New Year's Eve, or New Year's night, I guess.
Yeah, at the point of the ball hitting the net is where my arse left my seat in the park end to make my way. Paul Pogba. All of the kind of man against boys vibes that he gave at that game at Goodison Park, I felt that watching that game against Switzerland, because it's almost his decision or his ability to retain the ball and do something magical with it is just basically his decision. It was just creating ridiculous pieces of football and skill at whim, and I think for that reason, it was just such a shame to see those players go out. And I know that, you know, it was...
Yeah, but the theater, though, dude, you got to admit, the theater part was great because on the one hand, Pogba plays like a god. He scores that goal, and of course, he has the, like, you can call it style or you can call it that thing, that chip in his head that says, this is going to be the moment that I put on Instagram and is in my next Nike ad or whatever. But, you know, he folds his arms and just stands there. And, you know, I mean, it's so outrageous. And then he's the one who makes the mistake that allows the equalizer. And, you know, after when France went up 2-0, I almost left. I almost turned the TV off and went, this game is so over. And then to have Mbappe, it was so weird to have every single one of them Not even, and it wasn't really close. Like they all nine, those first nine kicks were as sure as like those guys had nerves of steel. So Kylian Mbappe, I'm just like, well, it's fucking it's Kylian Mbappe, man. Yeah. And, you know, but boy, I sometimes you watch Mbappe and you forget how young he actually is because he has slight old face, which, you know, like LeBron James when he was 18 looked like he was basically what he looks like now, only a little smaller. Like I think Mbappe's got a little bit of that, but man, what theater. And I screamed at the television. I'm not French, dude. I don't care. Why do I care? But I was so into that game. You can't watch that and then go back to, you know, Everton I can go back to, I guess. But I just, there's, it's hard to watch other lower levels of football when you see it, the sport deliver on its promise like that.
Graeme Souness was in the studio on whatever TV channel that the game was on the night, and honestly you could taste his excitement as Pogba did his run up for a penalty. So if Pogba misses, we are never ever going to hit the end of this. Cancel the 10 o'clock news after the game and just have Graeme Souness for an hour talking about penalties and haircuts. But yeah,
well, he still can talk about Pogba's mistake that allowed them back in the game. I mean, you know, yeah.
The night after, we obviously had England as well, and you know, as much as I'll be a well documented, definitely not arsed about England in any way. It's been interesting watching England from a point of view of just being the competition's best defense, which I think so much of the narrative coming into this tournament was how can England fit in 12 attacking midfielders into their first 11, but. To see them keep four clean sheets, for the goalkeeper who does that to be Jordan Pickford, for it to be the first time that England have done that in a major tournament since 1966. I mean, all of these things are pretty much, other than barbecues, Rob.
They're setting you up, Mark. They're just setting you up.
But other than whether you like gas or coal barbecues, the England team is pretty much all that anyone in this country talks about at the moment. But
yeah, I get it. I get it.
We are now looking down the prospect of England playing Ukraine in Italy, and then one of, help me out here, Denmark or someone else. Anyway, England's semi-final. Right,
don't ask me to help, buddy.
England's semi-final was essentially on Tuesday night against Germany, and they're looking at a real prospect of getting into the final now. But the thing I'd like to focus on, really, as I say, from a footballing point of view, I will buy into whatever football match is the best quality, and I would say rarely England's is that. I think obviously Monday night just spoilt us totally before that game, but the level of social excitement that exists in a country for its football team to do well. England's next game, Rob, is on Saturday night at 8 p.m. local time. Honestly, I just think this country will just dissolve inside itself because I just don't think anyone, viewing figures are anticipated being something like 20 to 25 million, which is like a third of the country. You can't imagine how much this totally... You'll probably have seen on Twitter that the amount of sort of football's coming home memes. I will give it to England fans. They absolutely buy into anything positive that their team dangles them. And it's got all of those World Cup feels from a few years ago whereby we get a pretty favourable draw. And even at such an early stage in the tournament, we're thinking about what we're going to be doing for when England play in the final. It's got all those sort of dangerous connotations about it. But
yeah, we don't have anything like that here. I mean, I've been thinking about that. Like, we just don't like, and don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, we have a national team, obviously, but, and there are some hardcore U.S. men's national team fans for reasons that I don't fully understand. But whatever, that's fine. The women's team is the, generally speaking, the elite of the elite on earth in terms of the women's game. But what I'll say is that Americans don't like, we're into them when the World Cup comes around, or you know, like But yeah, basically when the World Cup comes around, we're into it. And if they're good, we're really into it because we're front runners. America is the biggest front running country in the world. But you guys, whether they win or lose or whatever, like they, it is amazing. I, as much as there is this kind of meh sensibility sometimes from the northwest of England about the English national team, that they never are not talked about, if that makes sense, right? And they are, and it captures, like you said, it is this fever. You guys catch the fever. That's what y'all do. And I think it's cool. And I wish that I had, there's really nothing we can equate to. I think the closest America ever got was maybe the Miracle on Ice type 1980. And even then it was hockey. Like it's not, there's just nothing comparable in terms of a national team. And so watching that, like I want England to go on. I also am like, no way Ukraine could beat England, surely, right? And then, so I'm just, because Yarmolenko is going to happen, it could happen at any time, just so you know. But no, I, man, Grant, look, the Southgate, I don't really, I think he overthinks things sometimes. I do think he is, and believe me, I don't mind if you get results, it really doesn't matter. And I'm willing to be wrong. I do think given all the attacking talent he has, he plays a very, 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 very conservative, bland form of football. But having said that, he called his shot with that lineup against Germany. Yeah, and you can't have anything but respect because he was going to take a ton of heat. If they'd lost, and they didn't, he called a shot, and I still don't really like the overall philosophy, but I can't argue with the results. England have not allowed a goal. They're just, you know, they can win this way. You just worry about, I sometimes think that there's this idea that the widest path to winning is scoring a goal and not allowing another goal, like that you can replicate that kind of game every time. And I'm just, I think that there will come a point where, you know, England are going to get scored upon, and how they respond, especially if they go behind, is going to be fascinating because, you know, suddenly the plan is no longer really the plan. And it'll be interesting to see how England can, they've certainly got the firepower to do it, but I'm so jealous. Like, I'm like, you can have Grealish and Phil Foden, who I think is the most talented player, maybe just raw talent on that entire squad. Like, I can't imagine Pulisic not starting a game for the U.S. that matters. Yes. You know what I mean? But England, I guess, have that luxury. But it's weird for a country that hasn't won a major, you know, trophy in a long time. But I'm pulling for England, obviously. So many of you, despite kind of meh England, I know you're into it. You got the fever. Mark, the look on Mark's face, if you guys could see it right now, he's so in the bag for England. He's an England super fan. It's so great. That's why you want Ben White to replace Yerry Mina, Mark. That's why. I get it. You're just in the bag for England at this point.
For a former 11. But oh, bro, if you could summarize me in any way, that I will sell my face for a St. George's flag to be painted on it, if it means for a crate of Paul on it and a 6-hour barbecue to be held in his name. I mean, You had me adequately cooked meat. That's all I ever need from my weekend at the moment. Yeah, I mean, either England or whatever you say, because I mean, if it means that I am just going to be intoxicated for the entire summer, a summer which we are actually getting over here this year, then I am more than willing to buy into Gareth Southgate's boring England side.
Hell yeah. Hey, look. Just go out and win. I mean, England are better than Ukraine. Anything can happen, but England should absolutely win this game. I hope you guys get everything that you wanted. I feel like you were supportive of me when it was Biden v. Trump, most of you. So I feel and you were pulling for me, and I got the result I wanted. So I want England to win the whole damn thing. And with France out, it's wide open. France, Germany out, wide open. This whole thing. Yeah. All right. Well, God dang, that time flew by. I love that we were able at some point to shift off Everton and talk a little bit about summer tournament football. I was saying before, like, it's just so much football, Mark. But man, I have to admit that the actual football part of things this summer has been pretty fun. It's hard to argue that. So, well, guys, we are going to end right there. We will have, of course, all the regular shows this week. Obviously, we Matt Jones and co have led just tremendous coverage here on the Blue Room of everything to do with Rafa Benitez. I can't encourage you guys enough to go back and listen to some of the interviews that Matt has done with a couple of different, it was Steve Huddersall, and I keep forgetting the other guy's name from, you know, on the kind of the Newcastle perspective of things. Both of them great interviews if you've got Blue Room Extra. I think there are even versions of it on the regular feed as well. But yeah, we'll have mailbag coming up this weekend. The football never stops at Everton. So we will, of course, be continuing to cover all through the summer. Sounds like we may need to have a transfer show here pretty soon, Mark. I think that Matt came out today as he was getting quite worked up about Moise Keane. So I think we'll have some of that soon. But you guys take care, and we will see you again next time for more Kickabout.
Progressive Insurance protects people's cars, homes, and other vehicles. But if you've ever seen our commercials or even just heard our name, you probably already knew that. What you may not know is that we support Humble Design, a nonprofit that furnishes homes for families and veterans emerging from homelessness. Because a little help goes a long way. And a lot of help, well, you get the idea. Now, if you already knew all of this about Progressive Insurance, we're impressed. We'll have to find something else cool to tell you next time. Find out more about how we're dedicated to our customers and communities at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Sports Social Podcast Network.